High drama in the Commons last night. MPs voted 328 to 301 to take control of the agenda. It allows them to bring a bill requesting that Brexit be delayed. The Prime Minister will now push for a snap general election. Here's how MPs reacted to that result.
The ayes to the right, 328. The noes to the left, 301.
Not a good start, Boris.
Let's hear Boris Johnson's response.
I don't want an election, but if MPs vote tomorrow to stop negotiations and to compel another pointless delay to Brexit, potentially for years, then that would be the only way to resolve this. And I can confirm that we are tonight tabling a motion under the fixed-term Parliament.
And then Jeremy Corbyn.
If the Prime Minister has the confidence in his Brexit policy, when he has one he can put forward, he should put it before the people in a public vote. And so he wants to table a motion for a general election. Fine. Get the bill through first.
Andrew Bridgen's a Conservative MP. Morning to you, Andrew.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. And Naomi Long, the leader of the Alliance Party. Good morning to you, Naomi.
Good morning, Stephen.
Well, let's start with you, Naomi. What do you make of what happened last night?
Well, I think what happened last night, certainly in terms of the vote, shows the strength of feeling in Parliament about a no-deal Brexit. And I think that those of us in Northern Ireland who have been concerned about that potential outcome should be reassured that Parliament have received that message loud and clear about how damaging a no-deal Brexit would be, and particularly would be damaging in Northern Ireland. I think that at the end of the day, this is a parliamentary democracy that we live in, and it's not for the executive to dictate to Parliament, but Parliament to gag the executive, and that is how our system works. So I think that last night was a victory for parliamentary democracy. I think, obviously, there is now a question mark over what lengths the government will go to in order to frustrate that. But at the end of the day, I think it's important that Parliament is able to do its job, and its job is to scrutinise government. And when the Prime Minister decided to prorogue Parliament for over 5 weeks, I think he was trying to frustrate that scrutiny, and it's very clear that MPs are not going to tolerate that.
And that's all very well, but we can go round and round in circles about this, as we've done for the last 3 years. Should this country be leaving? That was the result of the referendum. Where should this go next?
Well, at the end of the day, Stephen, the result of the referendum was leave. And, I mean, you know, nobody's in denial about that. But we also need to look at the context of the referendum. We need to look at the promises that were made ahead of the referendum. We need to look at the fact that there was dark money involved in that result. And so we have to ask ourselves serious questions about our standards in democracy. If we're going to allow one vote on one day to dictate the rest of our futures, at the end of the day, after that referendum, the people of the UK, right across the board, elected the current parliament. And the current parliament has made it clear that in its view there is no mandate for a no-deal Brexit, and it is entirely within its democratic right to assert that proposition, because no one except those who opposed Brexit ever suggested there could be a no-deal Brexit. Those who said they were in favour of Brexit said we were going to get the easiest deal in history. Now, that clearly was not the case. My fear was that we wouldn't. I said that. I was dismissed as Project Fear. And so we now find ourselves at a juncture where the future of the country is at stake. And I think what showed last night was that people now have put aside their own personal political interests. They have put aside their political interests. Yes, I do. Not all of them, clearly, but a significant number of them. I think when you have people who have been members of the Conservative Party for longer, frankly, than I have been alive, willing to risk having the whip removed in order to defend the country against a no-deal Brexit, it puts in context how serious this situation is and how seriously those MPs are taking it. And I think, for me, that is actually reassuring, because my fear throughout this process has been that either through mismanagement or through deliberate acts, we would end up crashing out without a deal. We already know that the Prime Minister has made no attempt whatsoever to open negotiations with the EU to present alternatives to the backstop. The EU have been clear about that. So all of the talk about trying to get a deal is nothing but a smokescreen of bluff and bluster. And we're used to that from the current Prime Minister.
Andrew?
This is a big issue, Stephen, and people's jobs, livelihoods and quality of life depend on it. And I think Parliament has done the right thing.
Andrew?
Well, Stephen, I don't really know where to begin. There's not much that Naomi said that I actually agree with. She clearly doesn't understand the constitution of the UK Parliament. We have a constitution where the government have control of the order paper. They bring forward and approve legislation, and then they're held to account at a general election for the legislation that the government has passed. What we've actually got now is a break of that convention, aided by John Bercow, the Speaker, who's very keen to play to his Remain-dominated Parliament audience to keep himself in position. So we've got the opposition seizing control of the order paper with the help of Conservative rebels and passing legislation, probably this today, which the government neither supports or approves or has brought forward. This is unprecedented stuff. What we're going to have now is...
But people like you are trying to force this country out of the EU, while there is at least a legitimate view of how damaging it's going to be. Are you not worried how damaging it's going to be scenario?
Let's be very clear. Those people who wish to take no deal off the table, what they actually want, the vast majority of them, is not to leave the European Union. The moment we take no deal off the table, as the opposition... many of them who stood on a manifesto in 2017 saying they were going to respect the result, but now they've become Remain-supporting parties. Once you take that no deal off the table, that is the death knell for any prospect of renegotiations with the European Union. Why, they're not going
to do that. But you know what, Andrew? That's politics, and you're a politician, and that's what you're going to talk about. What I'm maybe going to focus on today are the real-life scenarios. Can you guarantee people that there are not going to be certain food shortages? Can you guarantee them that they're going to have that they need?
Stephen, you know as well as I do that the only guarantees in life are death and taxes.
Right, you know, so you can't guarantee them.
Well, you can't guarantee the sun's going to come up tomorrow morning, but I think it probably is going to, isn't it?
But we've seen the Yellowhammer document speculating, basically the government's
that was
own
a plan
document.
For, that document is a very worst-case scenario which the government has to take into account.
When was it published? How up to date or out of date? The government were trying to say it was out of date. The DUP were saying it's out of date.
I said the government has to plan for the very worst case scenario. No one ever gets sacked from the civil servants or service or loses their pension or sacked as a minister for over planning. You get done. Well, it happens for under planning.
There are quite a few journalists who've been looking at that story, saying it was not a worst case scenario. It was a credible projection of what some people were facing. Of course, there's been ambiguity around that. How out of date was that document,
Look, on the day that if we leave with so-called no deal, there are lots of deals that have been done on a sectorial basis. But if we do leave on no deal, the goods we produced that are on those lorries that hit the border minutes, hours after we've left the European Union are all made to your EU standard. The goods coming in, the vast majority of the goods travelling across the Channel are EU goods on EU hauliers coming into the UK. They haven't changed either. Can you tell me, Stephen, what extra checks you want on those goods the minute after we leave the European Union when we're all under the same standards? Please tell your listeners what extra checks you think are applicable for those goods the minute after we've left the European Union. They're exactly the same goods that were on those lorries the minute before we left the
European
Long? Union.
Well, I mean, a couple of things that I would want to respond to. I mean,
What extra checks, Naomi, do you want on those goods? How have they changed?
There are a couple of... If it's okay, I'll respond in my own time, Andrew. Andrew said that we agree on virtually nothing, and thank you. I take that as a compliment. When it comes to the issue of a negotiating strategy, I think your colleague, or erstwhile colleague perhaps now, Oliver Letwin, actually made the point very well last night. It is not a negotiating tactic to stand on one side of a chasm and shout at the people on the other, give me what I want, or I'll jump. That's not a negotiating strategy. That is simply...
Naomi, we've got the money.
Hold on, no,
we're
let's let her finish. Let's let her finish,
that
please.
Is simply, that is simply threatening your own position. And that is not the way to handle this negotiation. And what I object to is that we are all tied to the person who is willing to jump off the cliff. Now, I don't believe that that is in the best interests of the people of Northern Ireland, who I represent. And I fully understand our constitutional democracy. And it is a parliamentary democracy. The executive arm of government has limitations placed on it by Parliament. And it is entirely in order for Parliament to restrict the ability of government to be able to drive through those things for which it does not have a mandate. And it clearly does not have a mandate for a no-deal Brexit. When it comes to the issue of checks, I mean, this again is denial from those who want to leave the European Union. There is a requirement for all goods entering the European Union to be checked. There is a requirement for customs checks, but also for things like phytosecurity and phytohygiene checks to be done. And the fact that the goods have not changed is not the issue. Our status will have changed, not the goods, but our status. If you speak, for example, to those who are involved in the Freight Transport Association, they will tell you that there is not even clarity at the moment as to how they would be able to transport their goods backwards and forwards because of issues about recognition of driver's licences and insurances. So this idea that these are made-up issues is simply not the case. It may not feel as immediate to Andrew Bridgen, but it feels immediate to those of us who live in Northern Ireland, who cross the border frequently, whose businesses rely on that freedom, who, you know, for people, for example, who milk their cows on one side of the border, process their milk on the other side of the border, bring the stuff back to Northern Ireland for packaging and then distribute it via Dublin. Now, that might seem to Andrew like something that can just continue, but the reality of the legal situation is that it can't. So we're not saying that suddenly our goods will be less worthy than EU goods or that EU goods will be more faulty than they were previously, but the legality of transferring them across will have changed. And the denial of that fundamental reality is at the heart of why we have not been able to secure a sensible approach on this issue.
Well, let's talk about the legality. If we were to leave with what you call a no deal, we'd actually be under WTO terms. Under WTO rules, the introduction of non-tariff barriers, such as additional checks which are unnecessary, are illegal. So what you're saying is that the European Union, and bear in mind, we will have exactly the same regulatory equivalence to the European Union, exactly as we were the minute before we left. What you're actually saying is that you can't trust the European Union to stick to agreements they've signed, world trade agreements, legislation they've signed up to. They're going to break that and they're going to put unnecessary checks on our goods the moment we leave as a sort of punishment Brexit. Well, if we can't trust the European Union to stick to the treaties they've already signed, I'm not actually sure how we can negotiate a treaty with them if you expect them to break their treaties.
That's simply not the case, because under WTO rules and under most favoured nation status, if you're going to say that there can be completely free movement from the EU into the UK and from the UK into the EU, then that has to apply to everyone.
But we've got the special status that we have full regulatory equivalence because we're actually currently part of the European Union.
Naomi, do you want an election? Let's move this on.
Every single person, every other single nation that trades with us through WTO.
Well, they haven't left the European Union. They're not in our special situation, are they?
WTO rules are being held up as an example of how this can be resolved. Okay. WTO rules, for example, put huge tariffs on agriculture.
We can have tariff-free trade under GATT 24. We can have 10 years of tariff-free trade or we negotiate that.
I want to focus more on what happened last night.
That myth has already been debunked, and it's important that we don't allow these myths to continue to be peddled. We are now approaching
the inconvenient truth.
And no, you know what? The truth is only inconvenient to those who have lied throughout this process, Andrew, and it's not those of us who
argued. Naomi Long, do you want an election, and would you stand?
Well, the first question is simple. If there is to be an election, the Alliance Party will fight in that election, I have made no decisions about my future because that is at the moment in the hands of others, and so I await to see what happens. But I'm absolutely.
What do you mean it's in the hands of others?
If it's in the hands of others. I don't make the decision whether or not I stand. It's a party decision.
But if you you're the leader of the party.
I know I'm the leader of the party, but I'm also subject to normal democratic rules. And I mean, just as leader, I'm not a dictator, I'm a leader. So the party makes the decisions, not the leader.
But of course, why that's relevant, if you contested your East Belfast seat in a general election, you would have to quit as an MEP.
Well, not to contest it, I wouldn't know. But, I mean, that's an aside. Let's get back to the fundamental, because nobody's particularly interested in my personal choices. The issue here, Stephen, of substance is when there will be an election, because it's fairly clear, given the dramatic scenes we saw yesterday, given the removal of the whip from a significant number of Conservative MPs, that we now have a minority government, that Boris Johnson does not have the support that is required for him to be able to govern for a five-year term. So there is an inevitability that there will be a general election. I do not believe that election should be used as a way to further frustrate MPs in the House of Commons from legislating to prevent a no-deal Brexit. And so I do not believe, under the Fixed Term Parliaments Act, that he should be given the opportunity to go to the public, to the electorate, at this point in time, until the legislation to block a no-deal Brexit, to take that off the table, has been passed. And I think once that has been passed, then it's a matter for Parliament to decide when we have the general election. And when we do, the party will be ready to fight it.
Here's Daniel in Belfast. Morning, Daniel.
Hello, Stephen.
So what way would you vote in a general election, Daniel? Do you want us to stay or do you want us to go?
Well, I voted Brexit, right? But that was for my own personal reasons. But what I would like to say to Naomi is this. Naomi's an MEP, ex-MP and ex-MLA. So she knows what she's talking about when it comes to Northern Ireland, right? Now, she knows that in the House of Westminster, there is zero support for the backstop from both sides. Now, the Tory party... The majority of the Tory party were going to support the backstop.
Well, the biggest nationalist party in Northern Ireland support the backstop.
But you see, the biggest nationalist party is Sinn Féin, and they don't sit there. But the thing is this, Stephen, right? If there's a change of government, and Jeremy Corbyn puts together a government with the SNP and the Lib Dems, the SNP won't support a backstop because they says that it's unfair for them. In Scotland, that they want to be part of a whole European economic border, right? Now, but the rules is, if they take in the customs border and that stays, then the free movement of goods under European law has to be matched by the free movement of people. And the 17.2 million people who voted to leave didn't want free movement of people anymore. It's as simple as that. Now, so is she going to then support a new government that basically will not support a backstop? And if this new government gets in the power, how can they go to Europe and get another deal when the backstop is non-negotiable with the European government? So in other words, no matter what way you look at it, you're going to be leaving with no deal. It's as simple as that.
Naomi?
Well, first of all, the backstop is not non-negotiable. The backstop only exists until there is an alternative to the backstop, which creates the same conditions. Those conditions were not set by the EU. They were set by Theresa May and the government. And the backstop was a UK government proposition. In fact, the EU wanted a Northern Ireland-only backstop, and it was Theresa May, on the basis of her debates with Arlene Foster, who then went and tried to deliver a UK-wide backstop. And that's the one that has really bothered people. At the end of the day, Daniel, my priority has to be what's in the best interest of Northern Ireland. Those are the people I'm elected to represent. And I realise the catastrophic impact that a no-deal exit from the EU would have. And therefore, I believe that given the amount of information we now have that we didn't have in 2016, given the implications of a no-deal Brexit, which seems to be actually what some people who argued for Brexit with a deal actually want, that we need to take this back to the people. And so I've said consistently that I believe we should have a people's vote, that we should go back and have a referendum with the option for people to choose to exit with a deal, without a deal, and to remain. And that gives people the opportunity and a preference.
Well, would they not have that opportunity through an election? It would be a single-issue election, wouldn't it?
No, well, I don't think, you see, I don't think there is such a thing as a single-issue election. I think many people will want to paint it in that way, and indeed some elections are in all but name. But the reality is that people will vote, for example, for their local MP who has given them good service, has been very committed, and so on, and that will influence their vote. They will vote for a party that they have always voted for out of party loyalty. So there will be lots of things that will influence the outcome of an election. Of course, Brexit will be one of the main ones, but it will not be the sole one. The only way to determine whether people are actually happy with this or not is to put the question back to them, and then that empowers Parliament, because let's be clear, the majority of MPs already believe that a no-deal Brexit would be hugely harmful to the UK, and they believe that that needs to be stopped. Now, that being the case, their main concern at this point is that they don't want to be seen to frustrate the will of the people. Had they been willing to do that, this would have all happened a long time ago.
All right.
But they don't want to be seen to do that. One way of making sure that they're not seen to do that is to offer the people another referendum. That doesn't negate the choice that people made in light of the information they had in 2016. It doesn't ignore the democratic mandate that they've given their MPs, but it does give them an opportunity to consider in the cool light of day, with things like Yellowhammer and all of those other things now in the public domain, for people to sit down and say, do we really want to vote to be poorer? Because that is the choice that we will be making for our lifetime and probably for the generation to come after us. And it's interesting,
okay,
because Daniel was very honest, and I appreciate that. Daniel said that basically for a lot of people this was about immigration. And the reality of it is that this is not going to address immigration. Brexit was never going to address immigration. We've heard it wasn't about immigration from many of those who have argued in favour of it. So, you know, people voted for lots of different reasons, not all of which aspirations
will
be met by Brexit anyway.
Sinn Féin's Chris Hazard joining us now. Morning to you, Chris.
Morning, Stephen.
Of course, you're a sideshow in this, aren't you? The whole country watching Parliament last night, you lot not there, don't take your seats. You're going to say that's what you stood in front of the electorate and told them you would do. But do you not feel like a bit player in one of the biggest issues to face Northern Ireland in a lifetime?
Well, absolutely not. Do we feel like a player? We have to understand Westminster is not our centre of political gravity. We do not want to be part of the farce and the chaos that people are seeing unravelling in Westminster. And the key to this,
maybe you should want to be part of it, because Brexit is huge and it will affect people's lives here.
Yes, just let me finish the point. Because this debate is much bigger than the farce that you see in Westminster, the baying and the theatre that you see on a daily occurrence, descending into pantomime in Westminster. Sinn Féin have very much been on the other side of the negotiating table. Sinn Féin have been with the Irish government, been with, to be fair, the other progressive parties in the north of Ireland as well, and with the European 27. We have used our influence, we've listened to the people, we've listened to the farming sector, we've listened to the business industry, and we have used our influence in Europe and here in London and in Washington and in Dublin to ensure
what
that our issues, our interests are supported, and that the people that are going to be doing the negotiating, you have to remember that the MPs sitting in that parliament aren't doing the negotiating, they're negotiating with themselves. This is a civil war within the Tory party that's completely engulfed. And this is where the DUP have made the biggest miscalculation of their political lives. They have tried to sell the lie that they had somehow had influence in all of this. But the only thing they did was a grubby deal with the Tory party. A Tory party...
They've had so much influence that they've essentially stopped the backstop.
Absolutely. No, absolutely not. Because at the end of the day, after all is said and done, whenever people realise and whenever people sober up here at Westminster this morning and realise, at the end of the day, the European 27 still sit across the negotiating table from the British government, and the backstop and the withdrawal agreement is still the bottom line. No matter, and that, this is what people have to understand. The farce that you see in your TV screen is a civil war within the Tory party, and it is, does not affect the end deal and all of this. That is for the European 27.
It does.
They understand our issues. The European 27 understand the interests. They are the people who regularly make contact along the border communities. They are people that understand our issues. I'm very proud to say that Sinn Féin have been an instrumental role in all of this. Again, I will quote the former Brexit Secretary, David Davies.
What instrumental role?
In Westminster,
what has your party done that's been instrumental?
You only have to look at the serious amount of lobbying. You only have to look now at political leaders in Capitol Hill. Nancy Pelosi and others who have listened to Michelle O'Neill, who have listened to Martina Anderson, who have listened to our lobbying teams time and time again about the importance of the Good Friday Agreement, the importance of a farming industry, and the importance... This just this week, the civil service put out that warning. People are watching. People are listening. That's the role that Sinn Féin MPs have played. That's the role that Sinn Féin has played, to alert people to the dangers of Brexit.
What are you doing? Crossing your fingers and hope there's no back... And hope there's a... That there's not a deal at the end of the day? Cross your fingers and hope Brexit doesn't happen?
Well, none of us wanted to happen. The amount of people in the North, remember, the majority voted against it. And yet, I go back to this point. You look in at the farce and the chaos at Westminster, but at the end of the day, when the sober rains on people this morning, they realise the European 27 are sitting across the table. The withdrawal agreement with the backstop is still the bottom line.
Do you think if Brexit...
Stephen, could I just come in on that? I mean, Chris is in denial here about the role of Westminster. And I mean, you know, yes, he's right. Of course, it's right that we should lobby the 27 other EU states. And that's what I'm doing with others out here to try to have an impact there. Yes, it's right that we should work with the Irish government, particularly in terms of the border issue, to ensure that that's protected. But to ignore the fact that decisions taken in Westminster, whether to block a no-deal Brexit or not, have profound implications, not just for Northern Ireland, but for the entire island of Ireland, to me, is just burying your head in the sand. You have an opportunity to be able to influence that debate. Now, you are not influencing that debate. You may be influencing other debates that will equally take place. But if Boris Johnson manages to crash us out of the EU without a deal, you will have to accept that you sat back and let him do that. There's no alternative narrative around that, because you could have gone to Westminster. You could have had influence at this point in time, not just to protect Northern Ireland from the impact of a no-deal Brexit, but to protect the whole island of Ireland.
Well, let's let him reply to that.
It is not the shenanigans that goes on a nightly basis in Westminster that is going to protect the interests of Ireland. You only have to watch and to listen to the ongoings. Ireland isn't mentioned. Look at the DUP are sitting on the benches twiddling their thumbs now. The role is completely diminished. Their influence is gone. The rights and
issues of the people
of Ireland do not feature in that debate. You only have to look at what is said. You only have to watch what is said. You only have to talk and engage with opposition parties and with people here when you're in London to understand it's not about Ireland to these people. This is a civil war that has raged.
No, but it should be for you, surely. You have an opportunity to put Ireland on the agenda in Westminster.
It's a redundant argument, isn't it? Because they're not going to do it.
What I'm saying is that, you know, we challenge the DUP because they have propped up a government which seems to be hell-bent now on a no-deal Brexit. And we challenge the DUP daily their role in that. We can't simply sit back and say Sinn Féin are immune from challenge because they have a position which is...
Chris Hazard, can I ask this question? What is Sinn Féin's assessment let's make this real this morning for people on the ground. What is your party's assessment if Brexit does happen as to the reality for people here next month, in November? What is the Sinn Féin assessment? Does the party think there will be shortages of food? Does the party think there will be shortages of medicine?
Well, the first thing I would say is we wouldn't even be having a discussion about a backstop or about the impact upon Brexit on the Good Friday Agreement if it was not for the actions of Sinn Féin in lobbying intensively in both Dublin and Brussels to all of this. You only have to look at the impact of that, what other political commentators have said. And again, I will repeat, the former Brexit Secretary, David Davy, said in his time that nobody in London would have foreseen Sinn Féin playing a strong hand. But when it comes back to your point, Stephen, about the impact, you only have to look at the consequences of a no-deal Brexit being put out this week for the civil service, where they looked at the figures, up to 40,000 jobs lost could be lost. The severe impact upon the farming industry. There's not a single farm that I don't go to in South Down or a local business. Well, they're not extremely worried, not just about tariffs or about trade, but about their labour, about the people who obviously in border regions who come from the south. We know, for example, that the Daisy Hill Hospital in Newry, 10% of the staff come from the south. What is the future going to be?
But just finally, because we've got to go to the news, Chris and Naomi, Boris Johnson has said that he is open to the idea of an all-Ireland food zone. The DUP are open to talks about it. Your reaction to that, Naomi?
It's not just about food. So agri-foods is one of the major industries we have, but it is not just about food. It is about hauliers, it is about exporters, it is about our freedom to be able to move freely without bumper stickers on our cars. It is all of those things. And so a food zone will perhaps answer one element of this, but ultimately we cannot have a situation where Northern Ireland's economy is further damaged by a no-deal exit, because it will damage Northern Ireland's economy, it will damage Ireland's economy, it will damage the UK economy.
Our economics, and
it will do great harm to the people we represent.
Our economics and business editor, John Campbell, is going to spell out this food zone to us in a moment or two. But presumably, Chris Hazard, you must be punching the air with glee. There's another all-Ireland body on the cards.
Well, I think as Naomi has just spelled out, the dangers around Brexit, especially no-deal Brexit, are far more far-reaching than simply food. The DUP have had a number of years now to listen to the different sectors, to listen to the business community, to listen to civic society, and they haven't done that. They've ignored everybody. So to come to the table whenever I think the reality is starting to dawn on them with this crumb around food is just simply too little too late. They know that the backstop is the bottom line, and they know what needs to be done to protect the interests of the people we represent.
And how do you think, Chris Hazard, people who you represent would feel if, as a result of Brexit, they were having, for those people living in Northern Ireland, were having to put GB stickers on their cars if they go down south?
Well, we know that simply won't be the case. I haven't seen anybody, when you looked at all the commentary on this, I haven't seen anybody saying, oh, that's a good idea, I'll certainly be doing that. I know I certainly won't be putting any sticker on my car, and I can't imagine there'll be too many people who will be doing it themselves.
And just before you both go, because I do have to go to the news, a story that we highlighted yesterday that I know both your parties were very interested in, the Nolan Show revealed yesterday a whistleblower contacted us about how he worked in the Education Authority and he was instructed to mislead parents as to when the Education Authority were receiving applications about their disabled children. Naomi Long, the Permanent Secretary of the Department of Education, Derek Baker, has told this programme he is very concerned about the claims. He says the allegations need to be fully investigated. How much of a concern is it to you, Naomi Long, that some of our most vulnerable children are not being treated properly by the Education Authority? And as a leader in Northern Ireland, what are you going to do about it?
Well, I think there are two issues. I mean, the first is to do with the vulnerability of the children. And I think that parents who have a child who has particular special needs and disabilities need the reassurance, need the time to be able to prepare their children for school, need to be able to create an environment where those children are calm and where they know what's going to happen. And so having timely, accurate advice is absolutely crucial.
They're not getting it.
Being able to maximise it, and they're not getting that. And that seems to be the allegation that's being made. More than that, if somebody is coming as a whistleblower, there are specific mechanisms that need to be handled. But if parents are being deliberately misled, that is a very serious allegation, and it has to be investigated. And I think that all of us would want to see that happen, because we can't have those families who are already under huge stress trying to take care of their children and ensure that they get the best possible education that they can, are in any way, shape or form being misled by anyone in the Education Authority. That's something that will have to be investigated by the department, and that's something that we will certainly be pressing them to do.
Okay, Naomi, thank you. And Chris Hazard, before you go, you know, we've been asking the Education Authority how many children are currently sitting at home without a school place. How many disabled children are sitting on a pile somewhere? Their files sitting on a pile somewhere within the Education Authority. The whistleblower said their files lying all over the floor. They are not organised. Parents being misled. Education Authority won't even tell us how many children they are. What are you lot, as big political parties, going to do in Northern Ireland about some of our most vulnerable kids being treated like this?
Well, I was travelling to London yesterday, so I didn't hear the particular package that you had on, but I know certainly from my time as an elected representative that Education Authorities must do much, much better when it comes to to providing suitable education for our most vulnerable children. I think the systems they use are archaic. I think we need to modernise how we do this. I welcome the fact that they have now a hotline in place this week for parents to be able to deal directly with the authority.
You welcome the fact that they've put a hotline in one day before the kids were supposed to start school. That sounds like a well-organised department, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, if you let me finish, that's what I said. But that literally comes as very small comfort to parents who have to literally fight day and daily for their children to receive the very basic of rights, and that is education. Simply not good enough. And we need to see improvements when it comes to this. It just simply shouldn't be the case that you have to fight day and daily for basic rights. And that just simply is not good enough.
Okay. Chris Hazard, thank you very much indeed.